This is Welcome Home Radio, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on locally owned KYNO. Brought to you by Judy's at Bullard and West and by the Community Housing Council. Now, here's your host, Don Scordino.
Well, good morning and welcome to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host on our Valley's most informative real estate talk show. Today's going to be informative because we have three guests and we've got a lot to say and a lot to help our listeners with. And the theme of this show is, what do the people need to know? What do our listeners need to know right now about the real estate market so that they can make wise decisions? And we want to thank our sponsors, Judy's Home Decor at Bullard and West. And I always say, I've been in there, and I will tell you, that's how you can make a house into a home, and nothing better than a home. And also by the Community Housing Council, where they help you keep your home in the event of you're struggling with your mortgage. They give free, I don't want to say free advice because it is paid for, but it's paid for by HUD. HUD is a agency of the government to help people, and they can do that. So this morning we have three guests in here. We have Danielle Carrillo of Keller Williams Fresno Realty. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning, Don.
All right. First time on the show, right?
Yes, and I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Okay, great. And then we got a veteran on the show, and that is Mel Kleinfeld Lewis, also of Keller Williams Realty. And I say a veteran because you've been here before.
I have indeed. Yes, indeed. It's been a while, though.
Yeah. I was going to guess 2-3 years?
At least three.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Then we have another veteran here on the show, and that is Jose Escondon of Empower Home Loans. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
And just before the show, we came up with a new marketing term for Jose. Okay, taking his last name, Escondon, it's can and done.
Yeah.
That, so
I like it, Don. I like it. I'll wait for you to Venmo me how much I owe you on the marketing.
A lot. All right. Today in the show, we're going to talk about home loans, but also the partnership between the lender, the realtors, and how you can make it all work and go smoothly. And in partnership's really not the right word because it's not a financial partnership. It's a can and get it done partnership. Can
Absolutely.
Do. Yeah. Yeah. So, first, I want to start off by asking the general market. What, let's say we finished three quarters of 2025. How would you rate the year so far? And you're nodding your head, Mel, so I think you're ready to answer. Oh, mm-hmm. Now your eyes are looking at me like I'm in trouble.
Yeah. I was hoping you were going to start with the finance guy. No, I'm, you know, it's interesting. I think that we certainly are shifting into what used to look like a steadier market. I know we mentioned this even just right before we got on. Don, you mentioned the fact that it's feeling more like not just a buyer's market, but both buyer and seller really have a lot of power, I think, in this particular market. And so it may look different, it may feel like things are not moving, but I certainly think that we still have a lot of opportunities in the market that we're in.
Yeah, buyers do have a few more choices.
Absolutely.
I remember back in probably 2001, I took a time management class. And not just a class, it was a two-day seminar. So I came out of there loaded with all kinds of tips on time management. And I actually implemented them for about 6 months. And then the market changed. Mm-hmm. And now it heated up so fast that I no longer could just say, well, I'm going to get there 15 minutes early and relax, because you had to get there a half hour early to get wait your turn in line at the curb just to show the house.
Yep.
It was crazy.
Absolutely.
So, all right. That's way back when, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Danielle, you were in your elementary school.
Why, thank you.
So that now we go to you, Danielle. How would you comment on the market so far this year?
Well, I think I'm forever an optimist, so I think there is definitely work to be done and deals to be done and homes to sell. And I try to let the buyers know that they have options, and just it's kind of like a, you know, chess game. So everyone's kind of doing their best, and I think buyers are a little bit more particular right now. You know, they want to get what they want, and sellers are the same. They're a little bit more particular. So I agree with Mel. Things feel a little bit stale, but there's opportunity when you know where to look.
So you just set up a good segment later in the show. Options versus managing expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So and maybe that's where the job of the realtor comes in. We can help manage expectations. This is what you're going to see out there. This is what you're going to be faced. And one nice thing is right now, you can tell a buyer, well, go home and think about it and sleep on it. But, you know, if you really like it, call me tonight.
Absolutely. And I think gauging motivation too, you know, how motivated are you as a buyer, and how much do you want the home? And here are some creative ways that we can try to make it work for everyone.
I think even with the motivation, it's the seller too. How motivated is the seller?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same thing.
And, you know, a great way to see motivation is from a seller is, one, talk with the other agent too. You know, find out, well, why are they moving? What's motivating them? But a lot of times you can see it just by going through the house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
If they say must make a 24-hour a notice to show, must have a pre-approved letter just to show it, and then the house isn't really prepared or ready, mm-hmm. I'll bet you they're not motivated. They might say they are.
Yeah.
So, all right. Jose Escandon, what do you think? Well, how would you describe the market? And now this is going to come from the loan officer side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's pretty balanced, in all honesty. I've gotten, you know, people have a lot of equity right now. I think people have finally come to terms with the fact that rates are what they are, in terms of, you know, where they shifted from at their lowest point, let's say 2021. But I say balanced because I've had a good mix of refis. I've actually had several inquiries on HELOCs, and then of course purchase business is flowing like it always does. So I'd say it's pretty balanced. It definitely feels like it's balanced as well in terms of seller's market and buyer's market. So again, it feels pretty balanced out to me. I think inventory is still a challenge because people are, you know, always payment shopping more so than price shopping. So payment's going to dictate what the price is going to be. So obviously, the lower the price, you know, the lower the payment. So that always makes it tough. But that was the case even when pricing was lower and rates were as well. So it's balanced.
So you just described the importance of getting pre-approved for a loan. If you're going to payment shop, you need to know how. You can't just go out looking at homes, looking at open houses, and saying, "Oh, this one's 400, this one's 450."
Yeah.
Because what does that relate to?
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, people will look online and they'll see principal and interest without taxes, insurance, and mortgage insurance, for example. So it is, you know, you definitely want to speak to someone about it and plug in the real numbers so that they can get an accurate payment picture as they prepare themselves to get pre-approved or start shopping.
Mm-hmm. All right. Excellent. And tell us, what is a HELOC? You mentioned that.
Home equity line of credit. So a lot of people right now that have bought their homes, you know, in the past have a fair amount of equity, and they have really low interest rates that they don't want to alter or change, right? So if they want to access that equity to pay off, say, credit debt that's, you know, double digits in terms of the rate, then the home equity line can allow them to do so, to use the equity that they have in the house. So HELOCs have been fairly popular in the last couple of years.
Yeah. They were also pretty popular back in 2005, 6, and 7, yeah. But they got a little bit overused.
They did, yeah. Yeah, they definitely filled the bubble.
Because keep in mind, if you're using your home's equity to pay off credit card debt, first, you ought to be thinking, am I living over my means?
Correct.
Why? How did my credit card debt get so high? And then that TV set you bought on the credit card, you're now paying for it on a new 30-year mortgage.
Yep.
So yeah. Five TV sets down the road, you're still paying on the first one.
That's true.
And besides that, TVs are going to become extinct.
Yeah.
Wait, they said that about radios.
Yeah, and here we are.
Here we are.
All right. So maybe that 30-year mortgage is all right, huh?
Yeah.
Do be careful with that. And one of the mistakes the banks made back in 2006 in that era was they were doing 100% loan-to-value HELOCs. So if your home was worth $300,000, they would lend you up to $300,000. And then when the market shifted a little bit and went down to 280, if you had to sell, now you're going to have to pay off those credit cards.
Yeah. Yep. Now, their guidelines are definitely stricter, I think, to really help the buyer stay within the proper ranges, you know, so that they can't do that. So, because that's definitely not something you want to do.
Okay. When we get back from this first commercial break, I want to go to interest rates, because that seems to be at the forefront of a lot of real estate conversations right now. So stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio, 940 KYNO. Well, welcome back to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host. And our intro music is Put Me In, Coach, I'm Ready to Play. Very appropriate as the baseball playoffs begin,
yeah.
Or have begun. And we got a guest in here. He's fully attired in his Dodgers gear.
Darn right.
You must be a Dodger fan.
I am, yeah. You know that. Come on, Don. That's our common bond. Danielle's a Dodger fan as well.
Go Blue.
All right, there you go. Mel, she's shaking her head.
She'll be a convert by the time we're done here today.
Hey, I took my 19-year-old niece to a giant Dodger game, and it was her first game she ever went to, and she said she was going to pull for the Giants. And I think she did that just to get under my skin, right? By the fifth inning, she fell in love with Freddie Freeman, and she is now a diehard Dodger fan.
That a girl.
That's classic. Smart girl.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, let's talk about interest rates, because that seems to be at the front of most real estate conversations right now. Kind of a change of pace. Last year, it was fire insurance.
Yeah.
Not that that's gone away, but I think it. All the talk about the Fed lowering their interest rate has changed things. So what's the real scoop? Give us the real scoop on this.
Yeah. Well, obviously, the conversation revolving around interest rates is always a hot topic, because interest rates are arguably one of the most important variables, you know, when it comes to the loan part, at least, because it's going to have a direct impact on what the monthly mortgage payment is. But interest rates, I mean, we talked about, and, you know, we brought up the chart on what rates have done historically. And on our last segment, we alluded to the fact that in 2021, they were pretty darn low post-COVID. And granted, they were low after the meltdown in 08. You know, they, as you can see through the chart, they gradually went down to 2011 when everyone was refinancing out of the, you know, loans that they had previously. But in 21, we saw it go pretty low. And I'm fairly confident. I feel like the lowest loan I did was 2.125. And I remember my friend asking me if he was going to be able to refi in the future. And I said, I would probably never do that, but you can. but anyhow, we saw really low rates. Then we saw them climb. Our chart here projected, you know, over 6.5 for 2025. We saw them go up in 22 and 23, and they went up pretty quick. So the rate conversation is always important. In terms of rates right now, you know, a lot of people that are asking for down payment assistance, we've seen rates shift from 5.6 to 5 before the Fed had their meeting, and they've held steady at 6. We talked about it earlier. They'll probably come down again, and that is the projection for them to continue to creep down. We have other loan programs that help with assistance, and they vary from 6.25 to 6.875, but rates right now, they're fairly stable, and they're definitely trending downwards. So,
I have a question. When you did this refi for your friend at, you said 2.15?
2.125.
Okay. How long did that interest rate last?
Well, that window of 2.125 lasted probably a week. But in terms of living in the twos, it lasted a while. You know, okay. So there was a season of being within those twos and threes.
So if you're waiting for the absolute low, because my friend got a 2.25, I want to go get a 2.25. You might have a window of 1 week to activate, motivate, along with the millions of other buyers who are trying. So I guess nobody rings the bell at the bottom of the market.
No, it was the perfect storm. And, you know, rates move daily, sometimes more than once a day. But in that scenario, which is, I mean, you know, that arguably could never happen again. It was just literally the perfect storm. Locked it at the right time. Mm-hmm. Loan was at the perfect stage to lock. But rates were low in general. But, yeah, he just caught the perfect window.
Mm-hmm. All right. So for our two realtors here in the house, what do you tell a buyer when a buyer says, hey, I just want to wait for interest rates to go back down to zero?
You're going to be waiting forever.
Yeah, we're all waiting for that. I think it's a good thing to point out that when that interest rate does come down, the buyer pool goes up. Mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of waiting for that better deal. But that often means that you'll be paying a little bit over list price. It'll be more competitive. So that's why really focusing on when it's the right time to buy for you is important.
Yeah, sure. I agree. Absolutely. I think it's, not to throw out obscure numbers, but somewhere around 5 million if rates were steady around 6%. This was from a Buffini class, that if it did go down to 6 and it was steady at 6%, you would potentially see an additional 5 million people qualify. Yeah. And so that speaks to the conversation. Now, not 5 million are going to buy, but you're in a much more competitive situation if you're waiting.
I'm going to say that 5 million should buy, not that they're all going to buy. So why should people buy versus staying renting at 100% interest? I gave you the answer right there, 100% interest.
Exactly.
Well, I always say I should have bought in the eighth grade, you know, when I should have. But the sooner the better, because then you start building your own equity and you're paying yourself instead of your landlord.
Mm-hmm. And equity, there's different forms of equity. Sometimes your price goes up because you improve the property. That's called sweat equity. Sometimes it goes up because of inflation. Mm-hmm. In fact, everybody's saying how, well, gosh, the inflation rate's right at 3%. Well, home prices in the Central Valley went up 3.5%. So a lot of that was inflation. So it's a hedge against inflation. Mm-hmm. But don't forget, there's also principal reduction.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Your loan balance is going down.
So a question then for you, Jose. Since you're seeing these numbers, right? And let's say we are working with a buyer together. How, as a realtor, should I be having this conversation around interest rates?
Yeah. Well, before I lose the train of thought, I think one of a really good point on rent when you talk about 100% is when you ask a client, especially a long-term renter, if their rent's gone up and the answer is generally going to be yes, then that is the prime example of the owner of the property gaining appreciation, because that's why the rent went up, right? And real estate is generally the most appreciating asset that someone's going to obtain, versus a vehicle is the biggest appreciating asset. they're going to obtain. So your question was what, Mel, about the rate?
How should I have that conversation?
Oh, about the rate, yeah. I mean, I think educating the client is always the most important thing that we all do, because that's really what we're doing, right, is we're educating them and informing them so that they can make a good decision. But in terms of having a conversation about the rate, there are so many variables that fuel it. How much money do they have? Where are they at on credit? Things of that nature. But usually when it comes to rate, because oftentimes people do want to put the cart before the horse, it's just really getting the process started. So if they ask about the rate, they ask about monthly payments, they ask about price, it's the perfect segue to lead right into, well, let's apply and let's find that out. Let's get concrete numbers versus, you know, guesstimating on where we're going to be based on something you either read online or your relative that bought a house 15 years ago who got that 2.125, you know, their experience was. So I think that any of those questions is a perfect segue into let's apply and find that out, because that is a great question.
Absolutely.
It's hard to say a concrete number is the point, you know.
And that's then exactly you're kind what of I say as well. Yeah. It's what exactly does your financial situation look like and your potential buying power in the situation, not what the world looks like.
Correct. Not one size fits all.
And I would like to share with our listeners a chart that Jose gave to me. And I love this because it gives the historical average of mortgage rates from 1972 to 2023.
Yeah.
The average is 7.72, so almost 7.75. And we're well below that right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even if somebody said, oh, yeah, well, only dinosaurs were buying homes back in 1972. All right. I bought one shortly after that. All right. Let's say this chart shows the historical average from 1990 to 2023 is 6%. Well, we're right about there now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe why should somebody buy a home despite the interest rates?
Well, something I like to bring up when clients have questions about interest rate, I ask them what their rates are on their highest credit card. And sometimes they're like, oh, it's like 28 to 31%. And I'm like, wow. And maybe you're getting flyer miles, but let's talk about the difference between that versus buying a house and building that equity. And sometimes that puts it in a different perspective, so that 6.whatever% yeah. feels a lot different. And at that point, I like to loop in the lender, because then it feels more of a different conversation. You have a different tone, so it's not so scary.
Then there's always a thing. Let's say, going off this chart, let's say you had bought a home in 2008 and the interest rates were about 6% then. The purchase price was probably $200,000 for a median home. And then 3 years later, it looks like the interest rates dropped to about 4.
Mm-hmm.
So refinancing is not a bad choice, right?
Mm-hmm. Granted, that analogy is a little bit different, because the person that paid $200,000, they lost $50,000 right after the market crashed, you know,
mm-hmm.
If not more. I know I bought in 08 and I wasn't in lending at the time, and I lost probably $100,000 in 2 months mm-hmm. when it just tanked. But yeah, so rates were low. So yeah, you could refinance at that time.
Yeah. So I think you're bringing out a good point. That is, you should buy a home for the right reason, and that is to use it. I know I bought a home this back in the 90s for $200,000, and my mother brought her by to see the house, 5 steps in the door, and she goes, hey, you paid it too much. I said, how do you know? You're a seamstress. I'm a broker. I know.
Yeah.
What was her thought there, though?
What's that?
What was her thought when she said that? What was she looking at?
That was just my mother's personality.
Gotcha.
You could go buy a pizza and you paid too much.
Ah, yes. Okay.
But, yeah, 5 steps in the door. She didn't know too much about the house or the big, beautiful backyard or anything. But, you know, that's being that protective mother.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, A few years later, I guess God doesn't like mothers being wrong. The value went down to 170.
Oh, man.
Yeah, just to prove my mother wrong.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
But after a while, he let loose of the marketplace, and it went up to $400,000.
Yeah. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah. And as through that whole roller coaster ride, we were in the home for 22 years, raised the children there. The home served its purpose.
Yes, absolutely.
And by the way, here's another, we talked earlier about different forms of equity. The loan balance in 22 years went from $180,000 down to $20,000. So picked up some good equity there, yeah, just from principal reduction.
Yes. Correct.
That's awesome. Yeah.
All right. So what's your prediction, Jose, for interest rates?
Oh, good grief. Well, I mean, this chart right here, and you got to give credit to K-Dub and Mel for getting me the chart, but this chart projected 2025 to be at 6.7. I do think that this chart is based on conforming conventional, not govy or not, you know, covering all different loan types, but I really do think that the rates are going to trend downwards. I think that, you know, we had a conversation before we came in here, and granted, I live in the mortgage broker side, so rates have the tendency to be a bit lower. But the last 10 deals I've closed have all been, with the exception of one that was on a multiplex, were all below 6%. You know, I just closed one at 5 1/8, and I closed one at 5 1/4. So rates, they're trending downwards. I mean, they definitely are. Granted, when you're using assistance, it's a little bit different because you got to take whatever the assistance program has. But even at that, I mean, the most popular down payment assistance program through CalHFA or CalHAFA, they've been living below 6 for quite a while for FHA. You know, for a conventional, it's been above 6 when it comes to assistance. But even conventional rates, I quoted someone yesterday 5.99 with a little bit of a buy down, but it was conventional. So I think that they're going to trend downwards personally. They have been. And I think that, you know, everyone in running a, you know, government, they know that we need to really press those rates to get down to where they're a little bit more comfortable so homeownership is more attainable.
All right. With those thoughts, we're going to our next commercial break, but stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio, 940 KYNO.
I'm proud of the house we built. It's stronger than sticks, stones, and steel. Not a big place sitting up.
Welcome back to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host. We're here in the studio with Jose Escandon of Empower Home Loans, Danielle Carrillo of Keller Williams, and Mel Kleinfeld Lewis of Keller Williams. And I want to thank the three of you for being in here today and helping our listeners learn a little bit more about today's market. But I also want to thank our sponsors, Judy's Home Decor at Bullard and West, and the Community Housing Council. So thanks to a lot of people, including our listeners. And we also have to thank Bobby Thistle, who is our board operator. His baby boy is here in the studio. And as the listeners know, no kid is too young to be on the show, so you might need to bring him back in here, Bobby. All right. He's busy on his pad. All right. So let's talk about negotiating versus over-negotiating, which is also known as coming up empty. So we probably, all three of us, four of us, I got to include myself in there, have seen this where a client, could be a seller, a buyer, a borrower, over negotiates and comes up empty. So it's back to first base. Here you were almost on third base, ready to score, and now you got to go back. So let's talk about that first in price. How can people over-negotiate? Or how, no, better question, how should they negotiate on price?
Well, I mean, for us, we start with our comps.
Okay.
So before we even have that conversation, I'm already pulling up information around your property, the ones that actually fit, it makes sense. And then we're having those conversations. So whether it's on the seller side or the buyer side, I think also the biggest thing here is setting the expectations, right, up front. So if we're talking to a seller, let's look at the days on market. Let's look at how long homes are sitting right now. And so are we willing to, or are you, Mr. Mrs. Seller, willing to take that time? Because this is what the average looks like, and we're going based on potential average sold properties and price. Or what's the motivation, right? Are you motivated to sell in less than this average days on market, and you want to go with a different or let's call it lower price to start off with? But again, I think it's setting the expectation of every which way it can go based on how that price is set up front. And then same thing for me on the other side too. If I'm working with a buyer, before we're even writing up an offer, we're pulling comps and then giving that information to the buyer to make that decision based on their own buying power as well.
Now, I think we should define comps, because I have seen and heard people say, well, I know my house is priced properly because that one down the street is priced $30,000 higher. Mm-hmm. But is that really a good comp? It's not sold yet. It's mm-hmm. been on the market for 200 days.
Yep.
So that's really not a good comp. And it's human nature that we do comps. I don't know if everybody's like me, but I do comps when I buy a tank full of gasoline. Yes. As I'm driving, as I'm getting down to those last 10 miles. Yeah. I'm starting to look, and it's like, okay, $5.39 a gallon, $4.29, let's do it.
Yeah. I'm the same with chicken. Yeah. At the grocery store, I'm looking at the packs, and I'm looking at, okay, this one's 8 cents, and this one's 25 cents.
So it's human nature.
Yes.
But you also got to know what comps mean. I mean, maybe... you know, that really cheap gasoline is at Pete's Reused Gas Services. So, yeah, in other words, you're not going to get good quality if it's reused gasoline.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that sense, the home still needs a lot of work, mm-hmm. potentially. And so this is where it has, you know, the lower cost. And so if you're looking at on the buyer side, well, why can't I buy this house for that price? Mm-hmm. Well, the house that you're buying has a whole list of upgrades that have been done and things that you're not going to have to worry about in the next 10 years.
All right. Well said. There's also another big point in time in the real estate transaction where negotiation happens, and that's after the home inspection, termite inspection and such, and the disclosures, and then the buyer makes a request for repair. Mm-hmm. Give us some tips or insight on how to negotiate on repairs.
I always tell my clients to think about their non-negotiables. So what about this house is a non-negotiable that you would like done or fixed or ratified or taken care of? And I try to ask more questions for them to kind of discover, like, is the outlet cover that's cracked going to be your non-negotiable? Or is the leak in the bathroom going to be your non-negotiable? So really, I give them homework. Think about what you want to ask for the seller to repair. And is it really something that is something you feel can make or break the deal? Like, there's so many things.
Or what could potentially come up on an appraisal and that the lender may call out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, good absolutely. Point. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. So that's some value to the real estate professional being there. Maybe you can see past today and say, okay, this is going to be a problem next week when the appraiser comes out there. Mm-hmm. All right. Have you ever seen something where the buyer pretty much hands the home inspection report and says, fix it all? And next thing you know, they don't have a home to buy. All right, good.
Yeah. Lots of.
I see some finger pointing there.
Oh, because I've seen and heard transactions as she's going through with her repairs, or just even walking into conversations with her and her team on negotiating, and absolutely heard and seen myself as you're going through your repair request and typing it up, because the buyer wants everything on that report to be on there. And now we're getting into overflow addendums, and we've got several additional pages of line items that the buyer wants. So I've absolutely seen it. And yes, I've seen that over-negotiating happening in those moments too.
Okay, excellent. How about negotiating or over-negotiating in a loan situation? Now, somebody says, okay, you're quoting me a 5.99 rate. I want 5.
Yeah. Well, I think just to maybe kind of close up what you guys were talking about, you know, when you guys are talking about negotiations on the real estate side, and then you have the inspections and, you know, then Don, you alluded to the appraisal. You know, oftentimes I feel like, I don't want to say good, but a more experienced agent is going to know, well, let's wait for the appraisal, see what gets called out on it, to then reconcile that with inspections and kind of go from there. We all talked about it earlier. That's why I feel like it is extremely important to keep it local and really be able to have that relationship with the person that you're dealing with on the real estate and the lending and, you know, title, like all of it, and having that full circle and educating our clients on what this means and how we proceed as a result of it being A or B, right? In terms of negotiating on the interest rate, and when I have those conversations with clients, you know, again, it goes back to, well, let's see how you look on paper. Because generally speaking, you guys will initially speak to a client about a certain price range and then dwindle it down to what are your needs and wants, like Danielle said. And then, you know, pass that on to the lender to get them approved for maybe that goal that they have in terms of the price. So once we get down to brass tacks on the application, then we can start to have conversations about rate and really, again, educating them, right? Because based on credit, based on how much you have in reserves, what you're going to put down, what mold you're going to fit into in terms of loan type, then that's all going to fuel rate. I personally don't feel like rate negotiations is a real big thing, because it's very black and white. You know, based on your application and all the variables, this is going to be the pool of rates that you're going to qualify for. And then we can start talking about, you know, do you want to pay to buy it down? Do you want to not? Do you want to get, you can even get a credit back if we raise the rate, which not many people do. But yeah, in terms of rate, it's just, what do you look like on paper? And once we're done with that process, here's the pool of rates you're going to live in. And then again, educating them and really letting them know that we're going to have a conversation about it today, but we're not actually locking it until you're in contract and we're to a point where we feel good about locking, because we don't think anything's going to hinder our timeline.
Mm-hmm. And I like to tell my clients that, let me do some comps so that I can give to you what the low side and the high side of reasonable and acceptable is. You know, if it's a $500,000 asking price, and you off in, let's say it's well priced, but if you went in at 480, 475, you're probably too low. You're probably going to get a counteroffer.
Yeah.
Go in at a price where that seller's got to sweat it out. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to lose these people. Maybe I better take their 490 mm-hmm. offer. So, just a thought for you as we go to our next commercial break. So stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio, and we're going to hear Mel's response to my thought there, because I think I cut you off short, but we're already in commercial break. Welcome back. Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, and I would your host, and I would like to acknowledge Danielle Carrillo and Mel Kleinfeld Lewis of Keller Williams. You're here on the show. We got some more good questions for you. And Jose Escondon of Empower Home Loans. And we've come up with a new name for him as a loan officer. No, a new marketing slogan. Yes, can and it, yes, done. I can, and it's done.
Yeah. Yes. I like it, Don. You're the man.
All right. Okay. First, I want to start off this segment with, why should someone consider the Central Valley? What's good about this area? Why should people live here?
Ladies?
Well, I've always seen the Central Valley as an opportunity for growth. I still think we have a lot of growing available, whether it is land or new homes. There's still an element of affordability if we're looking at places like Southern California, we just mentioned, and then even Northern California. I'm not going to lie to you. When I was living in Southern California, I was considering going back to Sacramento. And in 2018, we made the decision to come to Fresno. Of course, Fresno State, go Dogs. But that was always a big thing for us, too. Personally, coming from L.A., better traffic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's an easy one.
Well, I used to say, as far as traffic, that our rush hour traffic means you got to slow down to 40 miles an hour
exactly.
for about 10 minutes.
Exactly.
But it's gotten a little bit worse, but not yeah. still nothing
not
at
LA.
All like being on the 405.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank goodness for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like it's a perfect mix of small town feel and growing big city.
Yeah. For me personally, I've lived in three states. I've lived on the East Coast, I've lived in the Pacific Northwest, and then, you know, obviously here. And I mean, one, you always come back home because this is home for me, but additionally, we're 2 hours from, 2.5 hours from Yosemite, we're a few hours from LA, we're a few hours from the Bay. We can be at, you know, several different coastlines in a couple hours as well. So I mean, I love the location. I get the heat, you know, which you always hear people talk about, but I'll take heat over humidity. I'll take heat over 8 months of rain like I experienced when I live in the Northwest. So, I mean, I love the Valley, and it's affordable. You know, again, all the variables for me really line up, having lived in a few different locations.
All right. Good. Well put. And I consider the Central Valley the affordability capital of California.
Absolutely.
When the median home price for the whole state of California is over 900,000, and it's right around 430,000 for the Central Valley, then hey, that means homes are affordable. And I liked what you said about we have room for growth.
Mm-hmm.
You can drive around the outskirts of Fresno, Clovis, Sanger, and you see building mm-hmm. going on.
Absolutely.
You don't see that in San Francisco.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Absolutely.
It's not a bad thing. I talked to a friend last night who bought in the central or the Justin Garza area, and tons of growth. Like you said, I live in the Clovis East area, and again, tons of growth mm-hmm. and in a short period of time.
Yeah.
Which you can't get everywhere.
And then I also liked what you said, Jose, about we're close to everything, mm-hmm. you know, the national parks. Couple weeks ago, I went to a California Association of Realtor meeting down in the San Diego area, and a lot of my friends from around the state say, "Oh, hey, what time's your flight leave?" I said, "No, I drove." Well, and yet we were going to be getting home about the same times.
Yeah,
even though I drove, but Fresno, Clovis, we're right in the middle of the state.
It's nice to have choices.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I could have flown.
Yeah.
But, all right. How do we manage expectations for buyers and sellers?
Be honest.
Oh.
There you go.
That's a novel approach, Mel.
I mean, I can't tell you how many agents I encounter that feel like they have to make the situation better for their client, or they have to protect them from, to be completely honest with you, that could get you into some hot water because now they don't know something. So for me, and I tell my clients this too, I'm going to tell you everything you need to know. I'm giving you all of your options at every step of the way during this transaction and at the very beginning too. Let's discuss it. Let's let's think about things that could go wrong or right, because hey, things may go swimmingly and we'll have a wonderful transaction. But I also don't want to fill your head with wonderful thoughts of fantasy. Let's look at reality. Let's look at what exactly we need to be doing and how to get through this transaction. But I'm going to be completely honest with you at every step of the way, because you need to know everything so that you, the client, can make the right decision.
All right. I like that. Anybody else have something on how to manage expectations for the buyer and seller or the borrower?
Well, I mean, I'll piggyback off of what Mel said, because I think when you give them all the information like that, and it's just information overload in a healthy way, mm-hmm. then you are setting a much better expectation, because you know, and I see it on the buyer side or the loan side, you know, people are generally nervous before they apply, which is why they're apprehensive, right? Mm-hmm. They think it's going to be like pulling teeth, and it's not. I always let them know right out of the chute, this is supposed to be painless and seamless. It's going to go very fast, and it's not going to be as difficult as you think it's going to be. So setting that proper expectation, and I think oftentimes too, when we bring fear levels down and subsequently buying levels up, then the buyers in our, you know, or even a seller, they're going to have the tendency to be more transparent with us, because they sometimes have things they don't want to tell us, thinking that it's how the negotiation process or it's supposed to go. They don't want to let all their, you know, show all their chips in a sense. So I like the fact that when you are honest and set that proper expectation in terms of information, I feel like it definitely brings those fear levels down, which again bring the buying levels up.
And back in when I was first starting in the business, I remember bringing a client in to be pre-approved, and the guy was sweating and the woman could hardly talk. I mean, they were nervous.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized I did not do a good job of managing expectations. Mm. There was nothing for them to be fearful about.
Yeah.
It was just a conversation across the desk.
Yeah. Well, it was probably your fancy cufflinks and your gold teeth, Don. They were a little intimidated at the time.
Don't tell our listeners can't see that, so don't tell them that. All right. So we just have a couple of minutes left, so I want to ask each of you, what do you want our listeners to remember most about today's show? Can we start with you?
Oh, my gosh, put me on the spot.
I did.
I believe that I want everyone to understand that they should probably talk to a lender or a realtor first and really get a good sense of how the process works, and maybe not to listen so much to the noise that goes around. You know, get in front of a professional and get your local information, not your information, like Jose said, from an uncle that bought 20 years ago, maybe in a different part of town, but just getting in front of a professional.
All right. Great. Thank you. Mel, yeah, how about you?
To me, I feel like it's simple. It's the fact that, just like Danielle said, talk to the professional. It's easy to say get over the fear, but I'm sure there will be. And I think that's even more so what I would want a listener to take away from it is you're going to feel all of the feelings. But just understand that if you are working with a true professional in that space, that in and of itself should alleviate that.
All right. Jose, how about you?
I mean, I'm going to, again, echo what they said. I think keep it local. Take that first step and don't be afraid to take that first step, because, again, I think oftentimes people think it's much more complicated and difficult than it is. And I love it when they're like, really, that's all I have to do? And then we're, you know, having a conversation at 9 a.m. and at 5 o'clock we're off to the races and ready to go look for a property. Especially now with everything being so seamless and done online and on our phones through apps. Mm-hmm. Everything is digital, so it's just very quick to know, you know, where you stand. And I think oftentimes when they do think it's difficult and it's not, it equates to a smile on your face and, you know, knowing that it's attainable.
Mm-hmm. And maybe not to be fearful to ask questions, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want them to think that I don't know this. But no one expects you to know. We know, so we can share that with you.
Yes.
So always ask.
And if we don't know, we'll know where to find out.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
And one way for everyone to find out is tuning in every Saturday morning, 9 to 10, to Welcome Home Radio, because we're going to go through all the the challenges, the trials, the tribulations too of our real estate market.
And so, the celebrations.
And the celebration, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I want to thank the three of you for coming in today and doing this show, and also thank our listeners and our sponsors, and thanks to everybody. And we'll be back next Saturday. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.